Good afternoon, good morning. East and West, welcome to the program. Jeff Merrick along with you for the next couple of hours. Sam Cosentino coming up on the program today from the NHL on Sportsnet. Not just prospect rankings, but also Sammy working the Winnipeg-Los Angeles game. We'll talk about the Kings. We'll talk about the Jets from last night specifically. Hello, Kyle Connor. Hello, Pierre-Luc Dubois, who continues to roll along. Josh Getzoff, playing wins play-by-play voice. Big win over the Panthers last night in a shootout. Pretty exciting game as well. Despite everything, the Pittsburgh Penguins continue to win. Injuries, COVID, not a problem. Marcus Pettersson now injured as well. He's had a better season than many expected, considering they were trying to trade him all summer. He joins the injury list. Josh Getzoff, Penguins play-by-play voice on radio, drops by an hour or two. Bottom of this hour, Hal Gill will talk to us about the Nashville Predators, 8-5-1, beat St. Louis last night, and who's been their early MVP? Matt Duchene has been outstanding so far for the Preds. We're standing by for Gord Stellick as well, host of NHL Network Radio's morning show, The Morning Skate, also part of Leafs Nation pre and post. We'll get to Stellick here in a couple of moments. But one of the things that caught all of our eyes, and most specifically our ears last night, was on ESPN on The Point with John Buchagross. John Tortorella. The guy knows how to get a headline, doesn't he? The guy knows how to get people riled up, doesn't he? John Tortorella sets his sights on Connor McDavid, of all people. Here's John Tortorella yesterday, last night on The Point on ESPN, on his thoughts on the best player in the game today.
What's the next step, though, to becoming a winning player, a playoff winning player, because you're not going to get the calls you do in the regular season. He didn't last year, and that was a bit of an issue.
Yeah, and he complained about it a little bit. He wasn't getting the calls. I hope I say it correctly, just shut up.
Yeah.
Don't talk about it. I do think he has to change his game a bit. Not turn into a checker, obviously.
But right.
He's talked about culture. He's talked about standard. He's talked about winning. You're not going to outscore. You're not just going to fill the net during playoffs and outscore teams. Mm-hmm. You have to play on the other side of the puck. You have to have that business type attitude of nothing's going to bother me, no matter how you're going to check me. Don't talk about it. Just play hard, play through it. But the other side of the puck is that important too. Come playoff time, I think he's learning. Tip's going to have to get that whole group. If they're talking about a Stanley Cup, they're all going to have to play a little bit a different way, not just try to outscore teams.
Okay, John Tortorella talking about Connor McDavid needing to change a little bit and to shut up and stop complaining about calls. By the way, there is a long-standing history of superstar players complaining about not getting calls or drawing to NHL's attention the lack of calls that they're getting. That would include one Sidney Crosby. That would include one Wayne Gretzky as well. The way I look at it is this, and we've already got a lot of Twitter responses to it. We're going to pepper and parsley this program today with some of those answers or thoughts on John Tortorella's take on Connor McDavid. The way that I look at it is this. Like, I don't think that John Tortorella is saying that Connor McDavid needs to turn into Patrice Bergeron, right? I think he's playing the narrative of you need to play some defense and you're not just going to score and, you know, you're playing at 170-point clip and that's not going to work in the playoffs. To which I would look at Connor McDavid and say, don't change a thing. Now, I'm not an NHL coach like John Tortorella is, but I look at a guy who's carving up the NHL and doing one thing, keeping the puck in the offensive zone. And one of the best ways to play defense is to not be in your own zone. And what Connor McDavid excels at better than anybody in the game is keeping the puck in the offensive zone. What he is doing is spectacular, specifically when you consider that this is an era where it's more difficult than ever to succeed offensively. This is an era right now with Connor McDavid where he is not getting, in a lot of ways, the benefit of the doubt from a lot of officials. And you saw that with the trip behind the net, which was pretty obvious to everybody. Except for the officials working last night. I'm not getting on them specifically, but here's someone who is an offensive juggernaut, keeps the puck away from his own net. That, to me, is playing the game. I'm not so sure about... I'm not so sure what John Tortorella is trying to get at. Like, what does he want Connor McDavid to do? He works harder than anybody on, and some would argue off the ice as well. There is no better offensive player in the game. I would argue there's no better player at all in the game right now. If anything, it's everybody around him who needs to try to come up to his level, not the other way around. And moreover, if you're the NHL, you want more of the 170-point pace Connor McDavid. No one's talking about giving Connor McDavid a free pass to the net. No one's talking about that. No one's talking about changing the game so you can't touch Connor McDavid at all. But many have pointed out, and you know, banging this drum obviously would be his agent Jeff Jackson at Wasserman. But no one's talking about changing the game so he gets free passes. But the slashes, the hooks, the holds, the slowing down, the we want the star player to fight through all of this to earn his goals. Like, to me, Connor McDavid should probably lead the NHL in penalties drawn. He doesn't. Let's get a couple more people here on the conversation. We're going to get to some of your Twitter answers on this one. We'll start the conversation today with Gord Stellick, host of the morning show on NHL Network Radio, along with Scott Laughlin, also part of the Leafs Nation pre- and post-game programs on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Gord, before we get into a lot of the issues that we saw last night around the NHL and preview tonight's Toronto-Calgary game, what did you make of John Tortorella with his sights set on Connor McDavid last night on ESPN?
Yeah, you know, and I listened to your introduction about it all, about what happened. And you can see, you know, that's the way he coaches. And, you know, it wasn't for everybody. It wasn't partially, it wasn't for Pierre-Luc Dubois in that situation. But I understand, first, the two parts. You know, one is, okay, about how you win Stanley Cups. And maybe the one extreme is Brett Hull acknowledging under Ken Hitchcock finally to play some modicum of defense, and he and the Dallas Stars got that Stanley Cup. The other part is about, as you mentioned, the whining. I remember, God rest his soul, the late John McCauley just said how Wayne Gretzky, and you mentioned that was kind of whiny when he started and yeah. And then stopped. Mark Savard had a great comment that Joe Sakic told him once, you're too good, you don't need to whine anymore. Like, imagine that, like the kind of, like, as an opponent, you know, mentioned that you're sort of coming of age and getting to the next level is you eliminate as that part of your repertoire, whining all the time. And but the other thing is, Jeff, like, here's where I get a little nervous. It's Connor McDavid. Like, you go back to the Guy Carbonneaus and the Steve Ludzicks, and I know there's more examples. You mentioned Patrice Bergeron that, you know, just decided, okay, to make my mark, to stand alone, to differentiate myself, I'm going to be really an excellent two-way player, an excellent defensive player, you know, whether the Philippe Danault brought value that way in free agency with what he did in Montreal and now in Los Angeles. So I respect what John Tortorella is saying, but also, I mean, if you're Auston Matthews, Connor McDavid, and to your point, like, just be Auston Matthews and Connor McDavid. Like don't start thinking that way at the expense of what you do, like the top 0.001% could do in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, you know, fiddlers fiddle and dancers dance, and don't expect fish to climb trees, and don't try to get them to do so. You know, let me ask you this then: have you ever seen the montage of great Mario Lemieux back checks?
I'll tell you know what,
it doesn't exist, yeah. Gord. I assure you.
Well, it's right beside the Pat Falloon back checking video, I think, when he. But you know something, you were just talking about a different era, and I remember back when Leafs TV would play those old games, you know, classic games, and I remember watching one. You know, 20 years later, but they're kind of neat to watch. And speaking of what you're saying, Mario Lemieux, and we had a guy named John McIntyre that played briefly for the Maple Leafs.
I remember
a little bit.
Yeah.
And basically, he was riding Mario Lemieux like a jockey at Woodbine Racetrack. I mean, that's what was going on, you know, back then. So you talk about nowadays, okay, what may be creeping into the game or might be there to impede Connor McDavid, Auston Matthews, and others. Boy, the NHL did do a good job of eliminating that, because it was hell. I mean, Mario, when he called it a garage league, you know, basically, you know, out of frustration, he wasn't entirely inaccurate.
Yeah, and I mean, that was, you know, getting slashed on the wrists and getting hooked and getting held and, you know, having guys, you know, on your back like luggage, like backpacks as you ski through the neutral zone. We'll get more into the Connor McDavid, John Tortorella stuff here in a couple of moments. Meantime, last night the Flames lose a tough one to the Montreal Canadiens. They're in action tonight against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Looks like John Tavares is back in the lineup for Toronto. How do you look at these two teams right now? Toronto's coming off a pretty big win against the Philadelphia Flyers, and all of a sudden, the Calgary Flames, and I mentioned they lose last night to the Montreal Canadiens 4-2, all of a sudden the Flames have lost four of their last five. How do you see these two teams right now?
Yeah, it's funny because if you looked at the Sportsnet highlights, the Montreal-Calgary game started with Brendan Gallagher stumbling, coming out of the bench to start the game, and you thought, oh, this is going to be... And then they were down 1-0, and they were down 2-1 to Calgary, then Montreal came back and won the game. Up until this last 4-5, but still overall, Calgary's been my biggest surprise, particularly when they came east on the road early on and, you know, won all those games in the New York area. Again, Daryl Sutter it sort of goes hand in hand with John Tortorella's comments. Like, Daryl Sutter, you're going to have to play a Daryl Sutter type way. And, you know, you see Monahan spending time on the fourth line, for example, that, you know, he doesn't care about that. And there's a Daryl Sutter way, and it won two Stanley Cups in Los Angeles that people thought wouldn't happen. And in Calgary, I think I'm going to continue to go on the success thing. Now, if they go in the tank now in the next couple of weeks, then it won't be the case. But I've loved the way they played. And the different ways they've beaten teams before. Toronto Maple Leafs, I mean, it's different. The expectations are so different from the Calgary Flames. And whatever that malaise that I termed it and others did, I've liked since the Chicago game examples. I've liked John Tavares's emotion there, a little more passion that he's shown. You know, I've liked some young leadership comments about things. Nylander taking accountability once. Matthews getting pissed off and about how they were going too slow. Even Mitch Marner, because this team has speed. This team's made on speed. That's their toughness. Their toughness is try to catch me. Okay, try to catch me like Patrick Kane. That's exhausting. That's the toughest thing to do in the National Hockey League rather than the physicality of it. So I will say that after the LA game, I thought it was a bit of a statement game in Philadelphia. And I thought last year, Jeff, that whenever they needed a statement game, they did it, you know. And I thought, just given the way they lost Monday, I mean, you know, you needed to have that a good effort. And it was really not the most entertaining game, but a good road game. Mm-hmm. And it was good they got a little defense in it.
Calgary playing their second game in this 11-day road trip, where they'll play seven games. And as you mentioned, losers of four of their last five, 4-2 last night to the Montreal Canadiens. Tonight they'll face off against the Maple Leafs. You know, one of the things, and we saw this, you know, two goals against the Philadelphia Flyers. Let me ask you this. Is the William Nylander debate now finally done in Toronto?
Well, I don't know what we really should be debating anymore. It's funny, like...
The contract, specifically.
Well, I think the contract, he's probably looking like one of the good contracts out there. So, yeah, that part, I think, Jeff, because, like, I still go back when John Tavares was signed, Kyle Dubas said on that day that all the ducks were in a row. And I took him at his word that I figured that, you know, like Pierre Lacroix used to do in Colorado with Sakic and Forsberg and Patrick Waugh and Blake, that, okay, here's the skinny. And there wasn't a cap back then, but here's the way we're going to do it. And everyone got on board and they signed for whatever amounts were figured out. So I got caught by surprise that Nylander went right to the 11th hour and 59th minute, because I'd assumed, you know, chats with Lewis Gross's agent had. So anyway, I think he started getting that negative scrutiny because of that, because fans, you know, often, you know, look at that somebody's perfect right to try to get more for them. And then he's always been a streaky player, right? So when he's off, he's off, and when he's hot, he's hot. But the streaks now are fewer and far between, and now all of a sudden he has actually not a bad contract at all.
As much as, you know, Matthews does Matthews things, and he's probably the best overall player on the Toronto Maple Leafs, Nylander now, you know, scoring goals and silencing critics, and, you know, despite the fact that people still maintain he doesn't play in tough areas, he plays in tough areas. Just have to watch the game to realize that. Does all of the offense, however, come and go with Mitch Marner? Like, when Mitch Marner is going, Gord, the whole team sort of goes along with him. And when he's cold, it's tough for the rest of the squad. Do you get that feeling?
That's got a lot of validity to it, Jeff. Like, it's funny, if you look at the NHL scoring leaders, Mitch is up there. Like, people would be saying, I thought Mitch is having not a good season or a so-so season by Mitch Marner standards. And, you know, I know most of them are assists, but that's what he does. And I would think, I mean, there's a ridiculous record when Mitch and Austin both get a goal like the least. But, I mean, that makes kind of sense because you've got two goals for starters with that kind of stat. Their record's ridiculous when that happens. But that's an interesting point. You know, I probably have to think about it a little bit more. But just off the top of my head, like I said, I think it's got a lot of validity, which I still – there's no question Austin Matthews is the better player. That's not a knock against anybody else. I mean, Austin's a treasure. That's a real special player. So, but to the point is, and a lot of teams have that someone else ends up being as Thurman Munson and Reggie Jackson years ago, the argument, which is the straw that stirs the drink. Well, you know, probably Mitch Marner in a lot of ways, as far as the scoring straw, you're right. It does seem like a lot goes hand in hand with his personal success.
Speaking of Toronto, 90 years ago today, it's the opening of Maple Leaf Gardens, a 2-1 loss at the hands of the Chicago Blackhawks. We've both spent plenty of time at that rink, you more so than me, and farther into the past as well. When I say Maple Leaf Gardens to Gord Stellick, what comes to your mind?
The best. The best. It comes to my mind, you know, we lived on Davisville Avenue, first of all, and then we moved up to Leslie and Shepherd, and I'd be in grade two, and I'd take the subway myself to Toronto Marty games in Sunday afternoon. It was just wonderful. You know, it was just a fabulous place to be able to go, a part of my childhood, and then to be the good fortune to be able to work there. A friend of mine was best friends. They were best friends with a guy named Stan Abodiak, who was the publicity director and happened to live in our neighborhood. So just an incredible set of circumstances that, you know, when I was fortunate and drove up there every day and there was my parking spot, it was just like, wow. It was just, it really was. It really was. I'm going to sound corny when I talk about something magical, but I love watching the building get ready and how it ticked and how it went. And I know it wasn't the loudest building in the world and that, but it just, you got off that College Street subway station and the hot chestnuts guys were out there and you went in and, you know, and there were no distractions and cell phones or anything like that. And just, so when, like, Air Canada Center doesn't come close, that's not a knock. I mean, everything's a facility nowadays. Like, Maple Leaf Gardens really was a hockey shrine. It really was. And later on, concerts and everything came as an afterthought. But I just smile. Like, there's so many great people there, great games, watching Leaf games, being a diehard Leaf fan. And, you know, you go back to the story about how it was built in an incredibly short period of time. Conn Smythe built it, but a guy named J.P. Bickle actually was the guy that financed it. I mean, Conn Smythe didn't have the money. J.P. Bickle was this bachelor that had tons and tons of money, and there's so many great foundations in his name, and they named a Bickle trophy that they don't give out very often to the most valuable Leaf, but it's just a wonderful story how it got built. So, I just absolutely go by, and I, you know, from the outside, it didn't look like anything special either, right? Like, you know, if you heard about it, the first time you saw it, you said, what? That just kind of drab bunch of bricks there? And, you know, it really didn't. But just inside, man, it's like my favorite memories.
You know, one of my, I always think of Harold Ballard, the old owner, because that's the owner I grew up with in Toronto. And I remember my, I played Little League baseball at High Park. And one of my coaches was also an usher in the Blues, a guy by the name of Dick Perry. And you know, he was a wonderful coach, wonderful guy, family man, was an electrician. And I remember he told me a story once. He said his son was accepted to U of T. And I think it might have been the first person in his family to go and get a post-secondary education. And, you know, Dick had a very, you know, modest salary. It was, you know, he was going to, you know, help pay for his son, but it was going to be challenging. And he was, you know, as an electrician working, as a usher, he was working as well. And he said that Harold came up to him one day and, you know, to congratulate him on his son making it to the University of Toronto. And he said, look, I'll make you a deal. I'll pay for the kid's university. It's on my dime, on the promise you don't ever tell anybody, because I don't want anybody to think that I'm soft. Now, I know it's pretty fashionable, and listen, he has his detractors, and rightfully so. I know that Harold was a very controversial figure in Toronto. But do you have one or two good stories about Harold? Because that's mine.
Yeah, there were a lot of those like that he would there were a lot of those like that, that he would do that kind of thing. I mean, a lot of it was he got publicity for a lot of those things. Okay, good. The parking guy just let me off here. I was worried. I'm sitting here, and I thought he's going to write me a ticket. Okay, that's good. I kind of gave him the wave. He didn't really take to it too much. But those kind of stories. Now, some of that you'd say, like when somebody was in duress, like one employee, his wife was ill, and he two first class tickets to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, right? You know, yeah. Things like that he would do. And some would say like the ushers could work there for a lifetime, you know, but you say, well, why didn't you pay them better when, you know, they wouldn't have to work there, but they love working there. So there were all kinds of those stories that way. And you know, when I started on there, I was doing some work with, we have a brother who's autistic and working at summer in these camp programs for autistic kids and that. And a couple of times there was a bit of a conflict about it. I wanted to keep working when I started there full time. And he just said, well, you better get up there, you know, you better get up there. And it was just no question taking another 2 weeks off that he kind of understood it was something important and something I was good at or whatever. And so, yeah, there were all those. And it does bother me that you can't win telling Harold Ballas stories, Jeff. Like, it's really kind of unfair. Like you can accept that, you know, it wasn't an environment to get a Stanley Cup team. Neither was a teacher's pension fund, by the way. Okay. I know they were slicker, but that wasn't an environment. But there were, like, if you met Harold Ballard, your first thing you'd say, geez, what a nice guy. Like, you'd be surprised because he loved getting the headlines, which he knew you had to say something outrageous, which didn't make for running a great hockey team when you had to be outrageous to get page one, you know, the old style. But then behind the scenes, that's the first thing someone would always be. They'd say, hey, you know what? Geez, he's a lot nicer than I thought.
Yeah. In the couple of minutes we have left with you here, Gord, around the NHL, it's tough in Vancouver right now. Last night just got beaten bad. Vancouver's now 5-7-2 on the season. They lose 7-1 to the Nathan McKinnon-less Colorado Avalanche. Mikko Rantanen with 3 points there. Demko surrenders 6-26. Halak comes in. It seemed to me as if it was, you know, almost every goal was that, you know, slot line backdoor pass and that slot line backdoor play. I'm like, am I watching the same goal over and over and over again and Vancouver's doing nothing about it? Because that's what it looked like to me. How did you see last night's Vancouver game and what do you make of the Canucks right now?
Boy, seven different goal scorers too for Colorado. So it wasn't like one guy getting four goals and then, you know, Pullman takes a stupid match penalty at the end of the game. And I know, like, someone made the line to Travis Green after about, is this one of those you burn the tape? And, you know, he made the reaction you had to. No, we don't. Like, burn the tape is when you're going great and going well, and then all of a sudden you lose a game 8-1. Clunker, yeah. And Mike Babcock said that when he was with Detroit, and they one of those, you know what, not even to watch the tape, just have a couple of beers on the flight home and, you know, what have you. But, man, you know, they're the opposite of Calgary. I was curious about those two teams because, you know, think last year they had to play the regular season games out, right, when the playoffs started, just to get those games in because of the COVID situation in Vancouver. I'd like the moves they made, but I don't like what I see on the ice. And that old thing about whether it's U.S. Thanksgiving, that's the deadline, whether, you know, Justin Bourne's article mentioned November 1st around then that, you know, if you're too far behind, history's shown that you're really, it's so tough to get back. But yeah, they better. When I set a statement game for the Maple Leafs on Wednesday, there's a bigger statement game effort that needs to come up from the Vancouver Canucks.
Edmonton Oilers, we talked about, when we started this discussion talking about Connor McDavid last night, they go into TD Garden and come back three different times to defeat the Boston Bruins by a final score of 5-3. Leon Draisaitl with a pair. He now leads the league with 12 goals. Connor's point streak continues. He's now up to 12. Zach Hyman with a gorgeous goal as well. Edmonton moved to 10-2, and it was that third period where the Oilers turned it on, and actually Brandon Carlo after the game said the third period was, quote, the worst period of my career. How did you see the Edmonton Boston game last night?
Yeah, well, that giveaway really stood out. That really stood out. I thought it, first of all, one of those real human moments for Colby Cabe about his widow out there and being embraced by both teams, you know, because he started with Boston, then with Edmonton. I thought that was really, That was a really, really wonderful, touching moment. And now, do McDavid and Draisaitl, do they get ticked at each other when the other one takes a scoring lead? It's like, do they sit there taking their skates off after? And, you know, kind of like Draisaitl at 3 points. And but you know, thing that's not talked about, Mikko Koskinen stopping pucks. Like, you know, Mike Smith's going to be out longer than you think. And
he's gone home, yeah.
Koskinen, yeah, has been the Achilles, or longer than originally they thought. And Koskinen was always the Achilles heel, right, about that. So I think, you know, he's given them, and he did that last night, like, you know, solid goaltending when they needed it. But, man, they're fun to watch. I mean, tonight we'll be able to watch them in Buffalo in our time zone. And Hyman, what, he got 8 goals? Like you know, and that's too, we knew that in Toronto. You know, you knew you couldn't afford him, but you knew what he gave you on an elite line, and he's doing that in Edmonton. And, you know, you're trying to find out here if Michael Bunting or whomever, you know, can do that on those two lines, what he did here and what he's also doing in Edmonton.
Yeah, it sounds like the no-move clause was bigger than we thought when it came to those negotiations. To your point about Koskinen, though, it's great that he's stopping pucks right now, .918 save percentage, and with Mike Smith, you know, back in Edmonton, he's going to be more important than ever. I have a hard time believing that if you're Ken Holland, you're saying, you know what, regardless of what happens to Mike Smith here, he comes back, that we're fine with our goaltending. I think we all fully expect someone like Marc-Andre Fleury to be available by trade deadline time, one of the Dallas goaltenders to be available by trade deadline time. Even if Koskinen plays well, do you think the body of work before this season, like if he continues like this, the body of work before this has already spelled his undoing? Because that's how I feel.
Well, it happened a few years ago with Jordan Binnington, as we well know, and I'm not saying someone's going to be is going to be the Jordan Binnington, but they put Stuart Skinner in, what, his second start. He was a third round pick. His stats have been decent in the American Hockey League. I mean, that gives you a fallback young goaltender there. But yeah, it's funny Fleury's name, because Fleury, by the way, does have a I don't know, it's a full no trade, but you know, he's got he controls his destiny. But I find that an intriguing one, because usually there's like trade deadline goalie deals don't happen that often, you know, and almost like Marty Brodeur going to St. Louis just was a nail there, that it just was such a little asterisk at the end of his career. But but I think that, you know, at some point, like, your window is only open so long. And I think more and more teams are understanding that. Like, I think Toronto Maple Leaf fans are trying to grasp, have we already reached the zenith of it? And is the window ever so slightly starting to close? Like, who knows? So if you're there and you don't want to leave any stone unturned, then I'd go out. And, you know, even like a hired gun, like even last year, I didn't fault the Leafs for getting David Rittich as far as trying to get some insurance there when they had the uncertainty of Freddie Anderson's health.
Big save Dave standing up, by the way, for the Nashville Predators. That's been a story so far in the NHL this season. On that, we'll let you go to enjoy the rest of your day. You're a very busy person, and that'll continue tonight as the Toronto Maple Leafs face off against the Calgary Flames. Thanks as always, Gord. Be well. Stay away from traffic tickets.
You have a great weekend. Yeah, we'll do post-game tonight, and we'll be covering the game tomorrow. Thanks as always, Jeff.
Love it. Thanks, Gord. Gord Stellick is the host of the SiriusXM NHL Network morning show, along with Scott Laughlin. That is Morning Skate, and also part of the Leafs pre- and post-game festivities on Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto. We'll step away. Mentioned Big Save Dave there a couple of seconds ago, and that's, of course, Dave Rittich. His Preds debut yesterday was a successful 1-4-3 overtime win against the St. Louis Blues. Matt Duchene, front and center again. 3 points, 2 goals, including the overtime winner. Hal Gill, former NHL defenseman, now Preds radio analyst, joins us to talk about the Nashville Predators and their 8-5-1 start, and most specifically, a rejuvenated Matt Duchene. That conversation next. The Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet radio network.
Let pass Granlund. He's been out there a long time. What does he have left in the tank? He'll buy some time. The Predators get some reinforcements in there. Josi comes back on. Granlund sees a way to attack. He's got Duchene. Over to Duchene. He scores! The Nashville Predators have won in overtime. The second game-winning goal in OT on this road trip from Matt Duchene.
It's against a really good St. Louis Blues squad as well. 4-3 overtime win. The Nashville Predators defeat the St. Louis Blues. Matt Duchene with 3 points, 2 goals, one of them, as you just heard, the OT winner. Hal Gill, Nashville radio analyst, joining me now on the program. First of all, Hal, how are you today? Thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, I'm fantastic. A beautiful fall day here in Nashville, so I'm taking the dog for a walk while I hang out and talk with you.
Nice. Very good. I approve tremendously. Let's begin by talking about Matt Duchene. He's been, I need to tell you this, real good. 13 points in 9 games, 7 goals, 6 assists. He seems to be rejuvenated, playing like a 23-year-old Matt Duchene here. I know it's still early in the season, but what do you point to when people say, Hal, what gives with Matt Duchene?
Yeah, it's just he's playing downhill now. I feel like for a couple of years, we watched him kind of, he'd do a cutback and go up the boards looking for a play. He'd do a cutback and, go down the wing wide and kind of wait for a pass in the middle. And now he's playing a little more direct, a little more deliberate. He'll make that move off the boards and attack the net. And it's changed his game. He's opening up space for himself. And he's also playing with Mikael Granlund, who's been phenomenal. He's just a horse and does a lot of dirty work for him. Luke Cunning as well. Those guys are making some space for him, but they're keeping plays alive in the offensive zone. Win a battle on the boards, and then they're attacking the net. And so I think that's the biggest thing. And a little confidence goes a long way. And now Dutchie's not just thinking about what the play is. He's making the play, and usually his shot is dialed in right now. So why wouldn't you shoot it? And he's thinking less. In Dallas, he had like a partial 3-on-1, and I'm waiting for the pretty pass, the saucer pass, and he just pulled the trigger and smoked it top shelf. So a good sign for the Preds. He's been really awesome. It's been, and when he is on, it's a lot of fun to watch.
So what's the direction here now for Nashville? I mean, one of the things, and this is a nice little bit of wordsmithing by David Poile, general manager, talking about competitive rebuilds in Nashville, right? You got to laugh, right? Because, like, hang on a second here. What does that even mean, competitive rebuild? Are you rebuilding or not? So where is Nashville at? I mean, last year we were ready for everybody to be moved by deadline until UC Saros said, hey, everybody, get out of my 5'11", 185-pound back, and I'm going to carry you guys to the playoffs. And he did. He was tremendous, as you well know. But we expected this to be, the sell-off Predators here, to open for business. We're looking for the future. We're looking at youth. And all of a sudden, they find themselves at 8-5-1. Who are the Preds, and what's the program here, Hal?
That's a good question. I do love the competitive rebuild, because I feel like there's so many young players that can jump in the NHL and have an impact. So you used to say, well, we're going to go young, and those guys would take a couple of years, 3 or 4 years to come around. And now I feel like guys are having an impact. And you look at guys like Tanner Jeannot, who no one really looked at as a big, huge plus to the team. He's been awesome. He's going out hitting, fighting, heavy on the forecheck, and then he's scoring goals. And so maybe if you don't do that rebuild, that partial rebuild, then he doesn't get a spot and a chance to show what he's all about. Phil Tomasino is another guy that he's starting to build his game, and it's going to take some time. He's not a lightning rod every time he gets out there. It's not like he's dazzling, but he's getting better and better as the game goes on. Yeah. Phil Myers, I feel like, had struggled early. And, he's had a couple games now where I go, okay, I like this kid. He's starting to do some good things. So I think you have a good core group of guys. And they, moving Ryan Ellis is a tough yep. trade. You don't want to get rid yep. of a great defenseman like that. But it opens some cap space for first of all, TSX home to sign, and then you get some young guys in, and you can move some players around. And so it's let Alex Carrier play a little bit more. It's let Dante Fabro play a little bit more, and they've really thrived. So in the end, if you get the high-end core guys like Duchene and Johansson, who are playing well now, if you get them to produce and you get the young guys coming up pushing from behind, that's kind of the recipe for success. And I feel like that's the way the NHL is going. It's a young man's league.
Let me go back to Tanner Jeannot. You just mentioned a couple of seconds ago, and I remember, you know, when Tim Hunter was coaching Moose Jaw, and I would, you know, check in on various prospects. He would always go out of his way to mention Tanner Jeannot, but he would always talk about this kid's fitness level and how he's, you know, this kid is, you know, torn up like a bad report card. You can light matches off him, setting fitness record. Like he's just that guy, and he's kind of the epitome of, you know, the guy that's earned everything he's received. Like, he's not coming in as a high draft pick anywhere. This is the guy that's always given himself a chance to succeed because he's always taken care of himself. And even in a league where everybody's in real good shape, this guy is next level, isn't he, Hal?
Yeah, you know, he's got a couple hits that kind of blow your mind where he's sending guys cartwheeling. He's explosive. We went over to Vanderbilt Stadium and hit some balls over there, and he jacked two of them out. He just, you can see, he's built like a monster. So, you know, he's a good athlete. He plays, I think he takes a lot of pride in being strong and taking care of himself. And I think the fun part about seeing a young guy like that is, yeah, he's got skill, and I think he's a better player than we realize. You know, he's got a good shot, and he can set his edges and protect the puck, but really he takes a lot of pride in being heavy on the forecheck and being physical, fighting if he has to. You know, Dallas Stars have pushed around the Preds for years. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning of that game the other night, he went right over to Jamie Benn, had a conversation, no fight, but just a conversation, let him know he was there, and it changed the game. I think it was, you know, in the third period, Klingberg is going back for a puck and wanted no part of Jeannot. Jeannot just went in and took the puck out of the corner. And, you know, I think not only does it set a tone for what he's doing, but it sets a tone for what the team is doing. And you look at your teammate out there just bullying people around and taking pucks, I think that says a lot. So he's been a huge bright spot for this team so far.
Yeah, to me, some of my favorite highlights this season are when he's carrying the puck and guys try to hit him and they just end up bouncing off of him. Like, he'll just, like, drop a shoulder into a guy. It's spectacular how strong.
Yeah, he got Doughty pretty good. I don't think Doughty
knows
what's going on. He got him pretty good.
Okay, so Hal, so what do you think of this theory? There's one person on this team, and how they handle him, to me, tells me a lot about the direction that David Poile is going to take this thing. If they don't extend Philip Forsberg, I think they're going more rebuild. But if they do, I think the rebuild talk ends. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it's an interesting, and I hate seeing it because in a contract year, Phil is injured, and no one wants to see that. You want to see someone's best game, and so it's awful that he's injured at such an important time for, you know, for him and for the Preds. You know, the Preds really want to see production from him and give him his money. I think that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, if he's injured, he's not producing. And Phil has such an elite shot and his ability on the power play to just rip one top shelf. He's got a ton of skill and can make plays. I still think his best hockey is ahead of him. But it's going to be tough to see how this plays out. You know, he's not in the lineup and they're winning. And so, you know, it's kind of one of those tough things. Do they say, well, we can move him and get something. Well, but if he's in the lineup and they're winning, they don't want to lose him. They want to keep him around. So we'll see once he gets healthy how this plays out. But I think you're spot on with that. I think, and I say, you know, just because if they do move him, I don't think that means it's packing up their tents and going home. I think it's more of a statement that, hey, we got to move away from Philip Forsberg and try some different things. But I'd love to see him come back, play healthy, and give it a shot. And I think the Preds would gladly give him his money if he went out and performed.
Last one here for you, UC Saros. So I was talking to a goalie coach a few weeks ago when we were talking about the phenomenon of smaller goaltenders in the NHL. And this is on a team that defaults very much to large goaltenders on a consistent basis. And his point to me was, you know, if you're a big goalie, you can make accidental saves. And it's really helpful when your goalie makes an accidental save just because he's big. He says the problem with smaller goaltenders is they don't make accidental saves. They have to earn and actually make every single save that they get. When did you start to believe, rather, in UC Saros? Because right away you see a 5'11 netminder out there and you say to yourself, I don't know about this. It seems like 6'2 is the barrier to entry for goaltenders these days. I'm not sure how this guy's going to do. When did you become a believer?
I became a believer. It was 2 years ago, I guess. I walked in the locker room and we were just trying to figure out, you know, what's this little guy all about? And, you know, Pekka was the top dog and everyone knew that. Yeah. And then I talked to some of the players, like, what do you think of this kid? And about half of the guys that I talked to said that he was better than Pekka. He said he's tougher to beat than Pekka. And I was like, okay, that means something. And then, you know, I'm always talking to my boy Chris Mason, you know, picking his brain about goalies because, I don't know, I always say just jump around and stop pucks. It's not that hard, right? But when you look at the technical ability, and when you break it down, you look at video, the technical ability that Deuce has is what makes him next level. And we watched a great goalie duel with Shesterkin and Deuce. It was both kind of similar styles, technically not big guys, but I'm always amazed with how fast he can hold his post and then get to the other side and make a technical save. And now he's kind of added a little bit of athleticism to himself, and he's making some athletic saves as well. So I think that just comes with confidence. Now he's a top dog, and he feels like he can go out there and play his game. He doesn't have to worry about, you know, Pekka over his shoulder is always going to be the GOAT, and he's going to take the lion's share of the games. Now Juice can go out and just play, and I think he's having fun with it.
Yeah, 925 save percentage. He's outstanding again for the Preds. Hal, enjoy the walk with the pup. Enjoy the outside. Enjoy the sun. Enjoy the fresh air. And we'll catch up soon. And keep enjoying this Nashville run. It's a fun one to watch.
It's been fun. I hope it continues. And thanks for having me on.
No problem. My pleasure. Hal Gill, former NHL defenseman, now a Nashville radio analyst, talking about the Preds, who beat the Blues last night 4-3 in overtime. And it's kind of hard to get a read, as we bring in our producer, Matt Marchese, a read on what this team is and what the expectation is right now. It's a winning squad, and they're getting great production from Matt Duchene and Mikael Granlund and Luke Cunnan. That top line has been excellent, but now we're starting to see Ryan Johansson produce more offense. We mentioned Tanner Jeannot as well. I mean, that's an interesting line, Ryan Johansson with Tanner Jeannot and Phil Tomasino. Like, there's some interesting things going on in Nashville. I'm pretty sure that in David Poyle's mind, after that playoff exit, that this was going to be the rebuilding squad, and the beginning of that was getting rid of Ryan Ellis. But then they turn around and they sign Matthias Ekholm to a contract extension at the age of 31. So we kind of said, oh, what are we doing here? Like, what are the Nashville Predators doing? What's the direction of this team? It seems as if they sometimes want to be a rebuilding squad. Other times, they just want to reinforce what they already have. I don't know. But right now, it's a winning squad, and it's an exciting one to watch, 8-5-1 so far this season. All right, Maddie, what do we have on the John Tortorella feedback from yesterday's comments about Connor McDavid needing to change a little bit?
Firstly, John Tortorella just wanted that attention, right? Like, he wanted that attention. For sure he did.
John Tortorella does not go into any press conference or does not go on any TV program without knowing exactly what he wants to say and how he's going to get a headline. And I have always, whether you agree with him or not, I've always respected him for that.
For sure. So this one from our buddy Dale Hunter's Helmet, at Hunter's Helmet. So what's with all the negativity on Torts' take? Isn't one of the most common hockey tropes, is playoff hockey different? And he has a point in one sense.
He does, but I see no reason to believe that the way Connor McDavid plays hockey won't be successful in the postseason. You know, Elliot's made this point before, and I think it's the right one. It's not so much that the officiating changes as much as the players themselves change. I just don't know that when you're talking about a superstar like Connor McDavid and the way that he plays and just how much better he is, you know, even with all due respect to the other elite players around the NHL, just how much better he is than everybody. Like, honestly, like, if I'm Dave Tippett, I'm not saying anything to Connor McDavid. Keep playing the way that you're playing. I understand that playoffs are different, but that's just because guys are more intense. I've never seen Connor McDavid shy away from that. If anything, that should play better into Connor McDavid's hands, because the more intense it is, the more physical it is, the dirtier it is, and that should mean more power play time for the Edmonton Oilers. And already they're looking like, you know, this is one of the best power plays in the history of the NHL.
Yeah, and imagine just saying anything to Connor McDavid and thinking that you know better than him. I don't know. That to me is just, like, I know you learn something new every day as a player, but yeah, Connor McDavid's so good. He's just so good.
Yeah, I just don't know how you would want him to check. Like, what would you want to sacrifice? I wouldn't want to sacrifice anything.
Not when he's putting up points like that.
No, man.
Okay, so this from Matt, East Coast Oil fan. 97 is operating on a different level than the rest of the players. These aren't fight through it penalties he needs to play through. These are desperation efforts to prevent him from scoring, and it's happening 3 to 5 times a game. I think that's a great point.
Yeah, and I can understand it too. I mean, how many times have you seen Connor McDavid, and even when he doesn't score, but just create a scoring chance, and everybody around him is just flailing? Like, just falling over themselves, trying to compose themselves and not get burned and get in position and try to figure out what he's doing. Because everything he does is so sudden. Like, it's, honestly, I don't know how many ways we can describe Connor McDavid other than just to say he's in the best player in the game, period, right now. There's no one better.
Yeah, and this one from Casey Colby. I love Torts, but sometimes I believe he says things that are beyond the control of his lips.
Well, it's interesting that he throws in the caveat. He needs to change a bit. So, like, he wants to go out there and say that he needs to change, but it's only slightly. It's just a tiny, like, I don't know. I mean, the follow-up question is, how would you like Connor McDavid to play? Like, what is he not doing out there that you'd like to see more of, and what's the cost of it? Like, if it's going to cost Connor, you know, X amount of offensive chances, no, because I look at every player like this. What's the create to cost ratio? So if, let's just say, you know, if Connor McDavid creates, I'll just pull a number out, 11 scoring chances a game and costs you 2 scoring chances against, or 3. When you have margins like that, don't you win Stanley Cups?
Usually.
I'm fine with all of it, aren't you? If he quote-unquote costs you a couple of scoring chances, that's when, you know, I was making this point off the top of the program. That's where you look around and you say to the rest of the players on the team, this is what Connor's doing with that net. What are you going to do with the other nets? Because we can't have Connor doing all of it. He's dominating at the other end, keeping the puck away from our net. What are you going to do if it manages to squirt down there?
I'm not a parent, Jeff, but you are a parent. It's like the kid that is doing everything right, and you look at the other siblings and go, see what they did? Look at what your big brother did or your big sister did. Look, yeah, this is what you need to do.
That is, as you'll find out one day, Maddie, that is not very smart parenting to do that, to compare one kid to another. Trust me.
Every parent has a favorite. Come on.
Yeah, no. That's not. At times you do, but not overall. You love all your kids. That is a limiting move when you're a parent. There's no long-term payoff there.